Happy Friday, everyone. Today is January 15th, 2021, and welcome to Today in Sports History, the podcast that will make you the most interesting person at the water cooler, guaranteed. And without any further ado, let's get started. In 1892, Jim Naismith publishes the first set of basketball rules in Triangle magazine. In 1934, New York Yankee slugger Babe Ruth, nearing the end of his illustrious career, signs a one-year contract worth $35,000, representing a pay cut of almost $17,000 for the Babe. In 1936, Horace Starnum is elected president of the New York Giants MLB franchise. He succeeded his late father, Charles, and remained the president for the next 40 years, presiding over the move to San Francisco before selling the team. In 1939, the first NFL All-Star game is played at Wrigley Field in Chicago. The New York Giants beat the All-American All-Stars 13-10. In 1942, the Chicago Cubs dropped plans to install lights at Wrigley Field because of military's need for materials. It takes 35 years before lights are finally installed at the ballpark. Also in 1942, U.S. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt sends his famed green light letter to the MLB commissioner, Judge Landis, encouraging baseball to continue playing during World War II. In 1950, Red Wings rookie goaltender Terry Sawchuk records his first of 115 career NHL shutouts as Detroit beats the New York Rangers 1-0 at Madison Square Garden. In 1958, New York Yankees announced that 140 MLB games will be televised on PIX TV this season in a deal worth over $1 million. In 1964, MLB executives vote to hold a free agent amateur draft, officially known as Major League Baseball First Year Player Draft, in New York City. Also in 1964, the San Francisco Giants make championship outfielder Willie Mays the highest paid player in baseball when they sign him to a new $105,000 per year contract. In 1965, one of the biggest trades in NBA history takes place. The San Francisco Warriors send Wilt Chamberlain to the Philadelphia 76ers for Connie Durkin, Lee Schaefer, Paul Newman, and cash considerations. In 1967, Super Bowl I takes place at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. The Green Bay Packers beat the Kansas City Chiefs 35-10. Your MVP was none other than Green Bay Packers quarterback Bart Starr. In 1972, world heavyweight boxing champion Joe Frazier stops Terry Daniels in four rounds in New Orleans to retain his WBC and WBA titles. In 1986, Montreal's rookie goaltender Patrick Roy records his first of 66 career NHL shutouts in the Canadiens' 4-0 win against the Winnipeg Jets at the Forum. In 1987, championship Boston Celtic NBA forward Larry Bird is named Man of the Year by Sporting News and the Athlete of the Year by the Associated Press. This is the first time that one athlete gains both distinctions in one year. The following year, in 1988, NFL analyst Jim the Greek Snyder makes several questionable comments about African Americans during a lunchtime interview on CBS NFL Today, and he is fired the next day. In 1990, 42-year-old former world heavyweight boxing champ George Foreman stops Jerry Coney in two rounds in Atlantic City in a non-title bout, Coney's last fight. Also in 1990, the Detroit Lions signed first baseman Cecil Fielder, who spent the previous season in Japan. Fielder went on to hit 51 home runs that season and become a premier power hitter for most of the 1990s. Switching over to the NBA, Golden State coach Don Nielsen becomes the second man in NBA history to appear in 1,000 games both as a player and a coach, joining Lenny Wilkins, as the Warriors lose to the Indiana Pacers 144-105. And lastly, in 1990, in a bizarre twist in the NHL, Washington Capitals fire coach Brian Murray, who had been their head coach since 1991, and replace him with his brother Terry, who had been coaching in the minors, thus making Murray family Thanksgivings the most awkward event in the world. In 1994, Lawrence Taylor announces his retirement from the NFL. Also in 1994, over in the NBA, the Dallas Mavericks lose to the San Antonio Spurs at Reunion Arena 104-87 to set an unwanted NBA record with their 17th consecutive home defeat, breaking the mark of 16 set by the Orlando Magic in 1990. In 1997, Chicago Bulls Dennis Rodman kicks cameraman Eugene Amos in the groin during a game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Rodman ultimately paid Amos a $200,000 settlement and is suspended for 11 games without pay. Thanks for sticking around and welcome to our deep dive segment. Today we're going to look at the first ever Super Bowl, one of the most watched events on television. When the NFL began in its 41st season in 1960, it had a new and unwanted rival, the American Football League. The NFL had successfully fended off several other rival leagues in the past, and so the older league initially ignored the new upstart and its eight teams, figuring it would be made up of nothing but NFL rejects and that fans were unlikely to prefer it to the NFL. But unlike the NFL's prior rivals, the AFL survived and prospered, in part by signing NFL rejects, who turned out to be highly talented players the older league had badly misjudged. Soon the NFL and AFL found themselves locked in a massive bidding war for top free agents and prospects coming out of college. Originally, there was a tacit agreement between the two not to raid each other by signing players who were already under contract with a team from the opposing league. The policy was broken in early 1966 when the NFL's New York Giants signed Pete Golgolak, a place kicker who was under contract with the AFL's Buffalo Bills. The AFL owners considered this an act of war and immediately struck back by signing several contracted NFL players, including eight of their top quarterbacks. Eventually, the NFL had had enough and started negotiations with the AFL in an attempt to resolve the issue. As a result of the negotiations, the league signed a merger agreement on June 9, 1966. Among the details, both leagues agreed to share a common draft in order to end the bidding war for top college players, as well as merge into a single league after the 1969 season. In addition, an AFL-NFL World Championship game was established, in which the AFL and NFL champions would play against each other in a game at the end of the season to determine which league had the best team. Los Angeles wasn't awarded the game until December 1st, less than 7 weeks prior to the kickoff. Likewise, the date of the game was not set until December 13th, since the AFL Championship game originally was scheduled for Monday, December 26th, and the NFL Championship game for Sunday, January 1st. The new championship game was suggested to be played Sunday, January 8th. An unprecedented TV doubleheader was held on January 1st with the AFL Championship game telecast from Buffalo on NBC and the NFL Championship game telecast from Dallas on CBS 3 hours later. Coming into this first game, considerable animosity still existed between the two rival leagues, with both of them putting pressure on their respective championships to trounce the other and prove each league's dominance in professional football. Still, many sports writers and fans believe the game was a mismatch, and any team from the long-established NFL was far superior to the best team from the upstart AFL. Players from the winning team would earn $15,000 each, while players from the losing team would earn $7,500 each. This was in addition to the league championship money earned 2 weeks earlier. The Packers' share was $8,600 each, and the Chiefs was $5,308 each. Now for a quick game summary. First and foremost, I want to recognize that each league had their own official ball, and both balls were used in the game. When the Chiefs were on offense, the official AFL ball, the Spalding J5V, was used, and when the Packers were on offense, the official NFL ball, the Wilson's The Duke, was used. Even the officiating crew was combined of AFL and NFL referees. All right, now to the action. In the first quarter, the teams traded punts on their first possessions. Then the Packers jumped to an early 7-0 lead, driving 80 yards in 6 plays. The drive was highlighted by stars passes to Marv Fleming for 11, Elijah Pitts for 22 yards on a scramble, and to Carroll Dale for 12 yards. On the last play, Bart threw a pass to reserve receiver Max McGee, who had replaced the re-injured starter Boyd Dowler earlier in the drive. Dowler had injured his shoulder 2 weeks prior after scoring a third-quarter touchdown. He was upended by a Cowboys defensive back several steps after scoring and landed awkwardly. McGee slipped past Chiefs cornerback Willie Mitchell, made a one-handed catch on the 23-yard line, and then took off for a 37-yard touchdown reception. McGee had also caught a touchdown pass after replacing injured Dowler in the NFL Championship game. On their ensuing drive, the Chiefs moved the ball to the Green Bay 33, but kicker Mike Mercer missed a 40-yard field goal. Moving on to the second quarter. Early in the second quarter, Kansas City Chiefs drove 66 yards in six plays, featuring a 31-yard reception by receiver Otis Taylor to tie the game on a 7-yard pass to Curtis McClinton from quarterback Len Dawson. But the Packers responded on the next drive, advancing 73 yards down the field and scoring on fullback Jim Taylor's 14-yard touchdown run with the team's famed Packers sweep play. Taylor's touchdown run was the first in Super Bowl history. This drive was again highlighted by Starr's key passes. He hit McGee for 10 yards on 3rd and 5, Dale for 15 on 3rd and 10, Fleming for 11 on 3rd and 5, and Pitts for 10 on 3rd and 7 to set up Taylor's TD run on the next play. Quarterback Len Dawson was sacked for 8-yard loss on the first play of the Chiefs' next drive, but he followed it up with 4 consecutive completions for 58 yards, including a 27-yarder to Chris Buford. This set up a Mercer 31-yard field goal that made the score 14-10 at the end of the half. At the halftime, the Chiefs appeared to have a chance to win. Many people watching the game were surprised how close the score was and how well the AFL's champions were playing. Kansas City actually outgained Green Bay in total yards, 181 to 164, and had 11 first downs compared to the Packers' 9. The Chiefs were excited about their prospects, while the Packers were disappointed with the quality of their play in the first half. Now onto the third quarter. On their first drive of the second half, the Chiefs advanced to their own 49-yard line. But on third down pass, a heavy blitz by linebacker David Robinson and Leroy Caffey collapsed the Chiefs' pocket. Robinson tackled Henry Jordan, and Packer right end Lionel Aldridge converged on Dawson, who threw weakly toward tight end Fred Arbenas. The wobbly pass was intercepted by Willie Wood. Wood raced 50 yards to the Kansas City Chiefs' 5-yard line, where Mike Garrett dragged him down from behind. "This was the biggest play of the game," wrote Bart Starr later in life. On their first play after the turnover, running back Elijah Pitts scored on a 5-yard touchdown run off the left tackle to give the Packers a 21-10 lead. The Packers' defense then dominated the Chiefs' offense for the rest of the game, allowing them to cross midfield only once and for just one play. The Chiefs were forced to deviate from their game plan, and that hurt them. The Kansas City offense totaled only 12 yards in the third quarter, and Dawson was held to 5 of 12 second-half pass completions for 59 yards. Meanwhile, Green Bay forced Kansas City to punt from their own 2-yard line after sacking Dawson twice and got the ball back with good field position on their own 44, despite a clipping penalty on the punt return. McGee subsequently caught 3 passes for 40 yards on a 56-yard drive. Taylor ran for 1 first down. Starr hit McGee for 16 yards on 3rd and 11, and a 3rd down sweep with Taylor carrying gained 8 yards and a 1st down at the Kansas City 13. The drive ended with Starr's 13-yard touchdown pass to McGee on a post pattern. In the 4th and final quarter, midway through the 4th quarter, Starr completed a 25-yard pass to Carroll Dale and a 37-yard strike to McGee, moving the ball to the Chiefs' 18-yard line. 4 plays later, Pitts scored his 2nd touchdown on a 1-yard run to close out the scoring, giving the Packers a 35-10 win. Also in the 4th quarter, Fred Williamson, who had boasted about his hammer prior to the game, was knocked out when his head collided with running back Donnie Anderson's knee, and then suffered a broken arm when Chiefs linebacker Cheryl Hendrick fell on him. Williamson had 3 tackles for the game. We want to thank you for joining us in this episode and hope to have you back for many more. Please don't forget to subscribe if you like what you hear and follow us and like us on all social media. Our handle is @SportHistoryPod. Again, that's @SportHistoryPod. Thank you to Jason Shaw of Audionautix for the introduction music, and Laura Robin, our script editor and director. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.